Now, Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Well, our guest tonight has been a chef for more than 40 years and has been one of the most enduring faces on Australian TV as the star of various cooking shows, including 15 years as the host of Taste the Tour during SBS's coverage of the Tour de France. He's written some 25 cookbooks and sold more than a million of those worldwide. And he's known to set hearts aflutter with his signature French accent. It is my pleasure to welcome to Great Australian Lives, Gabriel Gatté.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. How are you?
Good. You speak French.
No. That's the only
Pourquoi
word.
Pourquoi pas?
Okay, I'm already stuck. That's the only word I know is bonjour.
And champagne.
Oh, yes, of course, although we say champagne. Now, how are you, first of all?
I'm well. Thank you. It's nice to be your guest.
Now, for a man who cooks such incredible dishes, you're very fit.
Well, people misunderstand the role of a cook.
Yes.
We are here to nourish people.
Yes.
And give pleasure to people. We are here as part of the art of living.
Yes.
Eating well, rejoicing around the table, eating fresh food is really part of your life. So that's, and I'm aware I've got responsibility with family. I want to stay fit. My life is better if I am fit.
Well, I'm glad that I said that first up because that is a common misconception, isn't it? That
absolutely.
A chef has got to be fat or whatever.
Especially with French cuisine.
Yes.
People have a totally misconception of the way the French people eat because what people think of is the food in the restaurants.
Yes, but that's not the case, is it?
Not in gourmet restaurants. It's always a bit richer. It's a feast.
Yes, it's a treat.
It's a treat. You go out to have a special time.
Now, Gabriel, you've had such a wonderful career, as I mentioned in the intro, 40 years.
Yeah, 48 years as a chef and 40 years on television.
That is incredible. So nearly 50 years as a chef.
Yes, I started at 16.
Amazing. Now, it was 2002-ish or 2000 that you were recognised with a French National Merit.
Yes.
Was it 2000?
Well, it is, yeah. It's a recognition for my contribution to French gastronomy. It was in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a neat year. It was nice. Yes, French cooking is quite an amazing cuisine. It is a cuisine that has got a structure. It's like a language. It's like a grammar. It's like an accent. You just mentioned my accent before. Mm-hmm. The French have they cook with a French accent. That means that they cook with in a way that they relate to their country. They relate to the ground very much like the Aborigines people do. We say own country. Mm. It is amazing to have a culture in your cooking. The Chinese have got it, the Italians, the Greek, the Anglo-Saxon, not so much. They have got it. No, there is something, but it is a different approach to it.
Very different.
Yes, yeah. But there is something. The ingredients are fabulous. Mm. It's just that it was not in the culture so much to, generally speaking, when I say that, I always get in trouble. To really teach your kids to cook, as such.
Yes. Now, speaking of which, let's talk about how you learnt to, and let's rewind many, many decades to where it began for you in France. Where did you grow up? Where were you born?
I grew up in the Loire Valley, so that's where the chateaux are. Mm-hmm. And I can't even go up one century ago, if you want, because I certainly got influenced by my grandmother.
Wow.
Because she was a wonderful cook.
Right.
My grandmother has a tragic history from the point of view that she was 20 at the beginning of the war. She married when she was 20. Her husband went to the war and never came back.
Oh.
The same with her sister. Mm. Sister, they went to the war. Her sister had a child. And she never remarried her sister. My grandmother remarried. She remarried my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And so my grandmother really understood what the local culture, the rivers, what there was in the rivers, what there was in the fields, because it is about what you grow, what you cook. That's what makes the signature of your place.
Mm.
If you are Italian, depending on which region you have, you might have different specialties. The same with France.
So where Loire Valley?
Yes, it is the west of France. It's the big river where the kings used to go there to spend their holidays, so they have built those, the most magnificent chateaus.
Yes.
The climate is mild. Beautiful. Yeah, it's just an amazing place. Mm. The rivers are extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Water is important in life. And that's because you can grow vegetables, you can have wines. It was a way of transportation of food a long time ago. If you really want to get into the culture of food, you have got to look at how they transported food a long time ago to create the speciality of the region.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You mentioned the Italians and, you know, your food comes from where you come from. So where you were from the Loire Valley, what was the specialty there?
Well, the great specialty was the Atlantic salmon. It was the wild one because we are not far from the Atlantic, which tastes a lot. The Atlantic salmon tastes beautiful here.
Yes.
But the wild one is something else again.
Yeah, I can
it's like
imagine.
Having fruit from your tree or fruit from the greengrocer. It's like that.
Yeah. What are your earliest memories of growing up there?
I mentioned my grandmother.
Yes.
She was a home cook with us. She also was handicapped later in life. She could not walk very well. But she was the most amazing person because she was very positive. She encouraged us to help her.
Mm-hmm.
She sent us to the garden to get some herbs, to get some strawberries, to get things. So we would help her. She really was nice. She didn't make a fuss about the mess. You know, like with children, there's never a mess that you cannot clean. The kitchens, you know, kitchen is
style. I don't know. I have two children.
No.
My house is never clean.
your children are in nappies.
Yes.
Okay.
Speaking of mess.
So, of course, completely understand. And you're in a very special situation. You don't have one, you have two.
Yes.
So we learned from her. She encourages us in a very positive way. And we didn't learn a lot, but just we were encouraged. And that gives you the joys of cooking, the joys of eating, the joys of sharing. And that grows up into something special. Like in you, obviously, you must have been good with communication and languages. Mm-hmm. And it's because somewhere someone encouraged you, a teacher, your parents, a grandmother, or someone.
Yes.
And then suddenly you are here doing lots of amazing things in your profession.
It was my sister, actually.
Here we are.
She used to force me into doing read these big speeches and deliver them and do these big productions.
What a good skill.
I know, but it was. I'm glad she did now.
You know, in the modern age, if I talk to young chefs, I said, you know, worry about your cooking, but more importantly, worry about your communication. Yeah. Worry about the way you are going to project yourself, to be yourself.
Yes.
Not to be like Jamie or
somebody
like Gordon.
Else. Yes.
You have got to be yourself. If you copy someone, you are gone. You know, you're just not going to go anywhere.
People see through you, don't they? If
yes,
you're copying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of you, though, back to your, do we have your grandmother to thank, do we think, for the incredible Gabrielle Gatte that everyone knows
and
now?
And my father, my mother. Mm-hmm. My father grew all the vegetables.
Mm. Did your family have a vineyard?
A little vineyard, yes. Mm-hmm. It was quite common because we're in a wine region to have enough vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
It was very rural.
Yes.
To have enough vineyards for your own consumption. And then you swap lots of things with others. You swap a box of apple for a case of wine. Suddenly you have lots of cherries. You give plenty of cherries. That was the way it worked. And it was wonderful.
That's incredible. Do you think kids now, like you're in Melbourne right now, are they missing out? I mean, that sounds like such an incredible upbringing.
Some are. You know what Stephanie Alexander does with the kitchen garden, where she encourages schools to have a garden so the kids can understand how things are growing. Mm. It's extremely important to understand how the life of vegetables comes.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it comes from the ground. We can be thankful to the sun, to the moon, to the clouds, to the water falling.
Just a beautiful, beautiful upbringing. What do you think your grandmother would say now about the incredible success that you've had?
Well, she has known my success because despite being bedridden for the last 20 years, she died when she was over 100.
Wow.
When I visited her, we would have discussion about food and things like that. And she would say, go and talk to the cook and tell him to put a bit more salt in my food. They put her on a strict salt diet. She was like, at that time, she was 98. she knew that it didn't taste good.
Yeah.
What's?
I was going to say, if she's got to that age on her
exactly
own diet,
right,
then
how,
why are you restricting her now?
As we say here, how bloody stupid it is, you know, and unbelievable.
Yeah, if she wants salt, give her salt.
Yeah, that's right. She wanted to eat 3 or 4 oysters. No, it's not good for you, Madame Gourdon.
She's 98.
I know. She had survived 2 husbands that because of the war. She has had kids. She has been handicapped for 50 years of her life. And they have put her at 98. You know, you can't be serious.
Was she a tough lady? I mean, she'd been through a lot with the war. She lost.
She was very down to earth. Mm. She tough with some people, but generally speaking, she was a very giving person. Mm. I think in life it's easier to fight if you are giving. You know, if you in a fight, if you diffuse the fight by surprising people.
Yeah.
Then people suddenly they don't want to fight anymore. Like it's an argument. You know, when you have an argument with people, you can twist it if you are clever enough.
Yes.
Yeah. Not always easy.
Now, was it common back in those days when you were growing up there? Was it common for all children to cook and to learn, you know, to learn about the everything being connected to the land and around, or were you a different sort of boy in that you were so
families
into it?
That are more than others, but it was the norm for kids to contribute to things, to set the table, to take their plate from the table, to bring it to the sink, to help little jobs. We helped my father a lot actually over the years. I helped my father in the garden a lot more than my grandmother at the end. Because gardening is a big job. My father grew the vegetables for 8 of us, you know. Mm. So that's a lot of vegetables. Like, he didn't have a garden where he showed 3 plants of tomato. There was 50 plants of tomatoes, and there was, you know, enough potatoes for the, you know, the whole year and all of that. So it was a serious business of growing food for the family.
And you said the 8 of you. How many siblings did you have?
5. There were 5 kids, my 2 parents and my grandmother. So there was 8 of us. Yeah.
And were the other children heavily involved in this as well?
My older brother is a pastry chef baker.
Oh, wow. I'd love to meet him.
He lives in Normandy. Uh-huh. He's a little older than me. We all can cook. At the moment, I've got 2 nieces that are chefs, and 1 trained as a chef and decided to another one. So one of my nieces is in Cambodia. She has a little cafe there. And the other one is in the region of Alsace at the border of Germany with her husband. Yeah.
Wow. All over the world.
Yes.
It's certainly in the blood, obviously, isn't it?
Well, the generation previous to us didn't travel as much. But food is one of those things where you become adventurous, you know.
Yeah.
And our generation became adventurous, you know. My wife was adventurous. We met in France, and she went from Australia to Europe through the land, hitchhiking and stopping in countries and doing things. She speaks a number of languages.
Sounds like an incredible lady. Have you been back to the valley where you grew up?
Many times. Because
is it the same?
A lot of things are the same. If you want the special food, they're the same. You mentioned one of my job, 15 years of Tesla tour. My job was, I was producing that show.
Yes, you were.
Organizing, as you
very
know,
very busy.
cameramans, locations, talents, insurance, flights, and all of that, and organizing the talents in France for the last 10 years. I was spending 2 months each year in France, going in the regions where the Tour de France bicycle race would go, and I would feature the great speciality of the regions, whether it was fish or desserts or wines or champagne. And of course, it has been quite a number of times in my region.
Right. Oh, well, it would have to be your favorite stop, wouldn't it?
Well, always, because when you meet your family, you know, the one you love, the one that, you know, of the same DNA, even if, you know, you can argue, there's
you lots feel of, like home. They
of
feel
course,
like home.
Of course. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Did you, aside from all of this cooking and helping your father in the garden and your grandmother, were you a good student back then in those days?
I was a reasonably good student, but the last year of school, I did lots of mucking around, changed from a boys' school to a school where there were girls. But I think it was really part of my education.
Yeah.
It is necessary to go through that stage, because after that, when I became a chef, I really worked intensely for like now 48 years of being a chef. It's like 65 years of being another job.
You know? Yeah. Did you know then when you were playing up in school or beforehand, did you know you wanted to be a chef?
No.
When did that happen?
It happened. I knew I love food.
Yes.
People say, why did you become a chef? And I say, I became a chef because I love food. That's the truth for most people.
Yeah.
It happened because I had mucked around so much that in France, you need to redo the year. They don't do it here. Like, they don't push you. You don't fail everything. I was good at lots of things, but, you know, some of the things I was not so good. And they say, oh, you repeat the year. That's common in France. And my father at the time said, well, you have done nothing or not enough. You go to work. You know, we came from a humble family and I had no idea what to do. One of my teachers says, don't worry, you can study again later. But in the meantime, do something you like. And I decided to become a chef.
Well, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. More with Gabrielle Gettè when we return. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tonight, we are celebrating the life of chef, television presenter and cookbook author, incredible cookbook author, Gabrielle Gettè. Gabrielle, before the break, we were talking about how you were mucking around at school. You didn't know what you wanted to be. You tried your hand at being a chef because you loved food.
Yes.
You must have not long after that landed your first apprenticeship.
Yes.
How did that happen and who was it with?
Well, it happened because I visited one of my teachers that advised, and he told me, you can study again, do something you like. And in the meantime, during the holidays, I went on a bicycle camp, and I was a good cyclist. And at the end of the day, we were all exhausted, some more than others, and we had to eat. And I cooked dinner because I was confident enough. I cooked probably an omelette with mushrooms, you know, very simple. Mm. And all my friends said, gosh, you're a good cook. Mm. And at that time, I was trying to find out what I was going to do with myself. So I decided to be a cook. I was lucky. I was advised to visit the best chef of the region. Went there with my dad on our bicycle, 80 kilometers to go and look for a job.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's a country life. And we had a chat, you know. I think he liked the fact that I came from a rural background that understood cooking, good food.
Yes.
I was not a chef at all. I was just a...
You're a boy.
A boy that could cook three things, but motivated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those chefs, I always got a queue of people trying to work.
Yes, I can imagine.
And he said, listen, I need someone. Would you be ready to start next week? So basically, that was it.
It's always the way it happens, isn't it?
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I know. And
can you start right now and then you never look back.
You know what? And then I learned that don't write letters for jobs if you work in that kind of trade. Yeah. Just go and visit
the
chef.
Go and meet them.
Meet them. You see them somewhere. Mm. You just say a few words.
I think that's true for a lot of industries.
Of course.
I think you can jump the queue if you go and...
If you have got good communication skills.
Yeah. Get to know them.
Yeah.
So who was that?
His name was Albert Augereau. Mm-hmm. It was a regional chef that I think that had been, he was the third of the generation in his family that of great chefs because they inherit the knowledge. And he was just representing the region. And with him, I really learned the skills of cooking, the love for food, the love to please. I learned to be a restaurateur.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's important in this profession to welcome people. In winter, we would remove the snow from the clients' cars.
Yeah.
You know, as an apprentice, you didn't say, it's not my job. You know, you could not say that. Yeah. You learn to welcome people. You learn to become one day maybe your own boss.
Yes.
And the guests come, they have a wonderful meal. They go back to their car, there's some snow.
You'll never forget that.
Well, it's not the fault of the restaurateur.
No.
But if the restaurateur has sent someone to him, you say, gosh, this was the perfect meal.
And what a nice way to leave.
To finish.
A very nice touch.
Of course.
Yes. When you first started that apprenticeship, I know you'd cooked with your grandmother and your family and cooked beautiful omelettes for your friends.
Yes.
Was there any other experience you'd had, any jobs or any, or was this really the first profession?
No, it wasn't actually. I had done lots of little jobs like picking raspberries, mm-hmm. picking apples.
Raspberries.
yes. you know, done lots of little jobs that you help people and things like that.
Yeah. Do you remember being nervous? Were you frightened that first day?
Yes. Yeah. Because to start with, the chef was a fairly tall man. You know, he was like six foot something. For a Frenchman, it's pretty tall.
Right.
at that time. Uh-huh. Okay. Australians, I felt that always a little bit taller than the French people. Mm. And of course, it was based on focusing and discipline. And, you know, like you need to be very mindful. And when you are young, you don't have good habits. So you really need to learn the habits. It's part of the profession. It was not rude like some chefs are.
Mm. Oh, well, that's what I was going to ask next. I mean, we see the cliche on television.
When I said that, I knew that
you were. The angry Gordon Ramsays and the, you know, and chefs do have a bit of a reputation for being, having a temper. And I think I was a waitress for a few years, and I think the chefs that I work for were similar. But they work hard and long hours.
I can explain to you why. It was the kitchen, the French kitchen, is quite unique. There's a long history based on a little bit like the hierarchy of the army.
Mm.
So someone says something, you do it. You don't argue.
It's not a democracy in there.
No, because, but I will explain it to you in a different way. Do you think if a conductor in an orchestra has a musician that doesn't play the music, he's going to be happy?
No.
So it is a bit like that.
Yes.
But there's ways of doing it. There's ways. And I always say, in a top restaurant, it's not the right thing to yell. It's not the right thing to be violent. Never.
Mm.
Because that is not the way we want to live. Mm-hmm. We want people to be happy. So the way is to train your staff in such a way that you give them the power to play their role nicely when it becomes under pressure. In television,
mm-hmm.
I have seen lots of rude people,
mm-hmm.
extremely rude people.
Can I imagine?
I'm sure you have seen a few. You don't want to name them now. You're too young. But I have, you know, my career is almost over. I can name some, but I won't because it's not necessary.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And every industry, there are, you know, bad eggs and good eggs.
Yes. But, and there's people that are in power that are not that competent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to be said. When you are in power in a restaurant and you yell at your staff, that means that you are not competent.
It means you're insecure.
As simple as that.
Mm.
But now, if we talk about a certain television chef, remember, television can be like that. You know, something happened and they say, this is the image we want to give you. Mm. This is the image that people want to give you in the shows that are very popular now on television, that where there's a competition to win the competition.
Yeah.
You play the nasty one. No, if you don't play the nasty one, we might make you play the nasty one with the way the technique of television work.
So you're telling me that when you're doing the Tasteler tour, you're not behind the scenes abusing people?
No, because to start with,
of course you're not.
So much experience that the team is minimal.
Yes.
In television teams, there's too many people around. Mm. Too many people.
And you'd know, you've worked on that many shows.
Yes, I have worked on shows. And it was really interesting to have that many people, like Channel 9, probably What's Cooking, you might remember that time.
Yes, I do.
It was an amazing show. Mm. But as far as was concerned, there was too many people hanging around. I knew they had a role, but they were in the way. and some people were trying to perform, you know, and there were people in the way because they had not worked out a way to move those cables around and those things and all those cables and those sticky tapes everywhere and those slippery places.
So when you first stepped into that restaurant and you were an apprentice, was it difficult to learn that culture in terms of, you know, you sort of know your place, everyone has their role that they do well.
Yes.
Was it difficult to slot into that though and understand, you know, you have your role?
It was very difficult because the hours were extremely long.
Mm.
The expectations were very high.
And were you shoveling snow straight away?
I was peeling potatoes the first day,
right.
Which is normal. And after peeling potatoes, you remove the guts from the fish and then after that you wash the dishes. You do that for about 6 months. It's part of understanding that dishes need to be spotless.
Mm-hmm.
Your bench top needs to be really clean. You know, we are feeding people. It's a serious business. And once you learn all those basics, then you can build up. It's a building block. It's like the structure of your profession. It's absolutely necessary to build.
So once you move from peeling potatoes to removing the guts of the fish to then washing dishes, you know you're on your way up?
Well,
or do you go backwards sometimes to the potatoes?
You do go backwards if you have an argument with the boss.
You're back to potatoes.
You often, as a young chef, you start with the small preparation.
Yes.
Because you're not going to wreck something, okay? Mm-hmm. You're not going to burn something. Mm. I'm always surprised, first-year apprentice in a restaurant that is cooking the fish. Well, either he's very brilliant or, it's not really responsible. It does happen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel sorry for young kids, young people, I should not call them kids. I've been a chef for 2 years and they're already in charge of a kitchen. They are going to stop learning because they are going to have, in Australia, like everywhere else, they are going to cook the same menu for the next 2 years. They're never going to move on. Mm. You need to change job every few years to learn.
Do you remember, was there a particular dish that you remember from those early days that Gabriel Gatte might have got wrong?
You know what? In the first year, I was never in charge of a dish. It's like a playing. Remember the example of the orchestra. You are just a small violin. Yes. You're not even the violin. You're just,
the strings.
You're doing a little bit of noise to help, and you taught. And then slowly you build up, like a language. You learn a few words. A language is like music. It's like cooking is like your profession. A word has a lot of meaning. An ingredient has an enormous amount of meaning.
Yes.
Olive oil, mango. It creates emotions and things like that. You put three ingredients together. Three words together, you have a little phrase or an expression. Three ingredients together, you have a little dressing or you have a little fruit salad. And then you become a bit more sophisticated with your cooking. You have got a conversation. And then you have got a
great
story.
Great analogy, yeah.
It is the way it works for every profession.
That's very good. Now, so you ended up, when you moved from France, you ended up at the Berkeley, is that right?
Next stop was at Prunier's. It was a fish restaurant in Paris, an amazing place.
Mm-hmm.
They were celebrating 100 years.
Right.
When you work with a good chef, either after that you give up or you usually continue working with good chefs because you have a good reference.
I can imagine.
And then that was in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
It was owned by a family of fishermen from the Atlantic who had fishing boats and fish, and they wanted to sell it in Paris. So in 1874, they opened a restaurant in Paris in order to have a place where they would sell fish from and sell oysters and seafood platters and open in front of people and the most delicious fish in Paris for the time.
Mm.
So when I was there, we were celebrating 100 years of the restaurant.
Amazing.
Amazing time.
So much.
Very beautiful. Yeah. It's an historical building.
And how did you get from there? What drew you to London after that?
Well, I realized that at Prunier's, you are talking at that time, it was like 1974.
Mm-hmm.
There were three young Japanese chefs working with us. 1974. Mm. Learning. They've been sent from Japan to learn.
Really?
And they were amazing because they were disciplined and they... Like you could not communicate in words, but there's a language, told you, of
kitchen.
Cooking. Mm. You completely understand each other.
Yeah.
There's a structure, there's a base, you know, a julienne. And so I said, well, and everybody else. I had done English at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I loved the song. And I thought the next adventure should be in a foreign country.
Yeah.
And I got a job in the Savoy Company in London.
At the Berkeley.
Yeah.
How did you find English cuisine once you got there? It's very different.
To start with, it was really hard. There's things that I loved, of course. You know, in England, there's amazing ingredients because what people forget is that the north of France, we have got the Channel.
Yes.
We have got the most amazing seafood. Mm. We have got the fishes. 30 kilometers on the other side, which is like from here to whatever, the Dandenongs.
Yes.
Okay. It's England.
Yeah.
They have the same fishes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. They've got the same, in that part of the world, the same climate.
It's funny how you think differently in Australia because everything is so far
so
away.
So far away.
But
yeah.
In Europe and the UK, I mean,
very
it's,
close.
It's a
very
train
close.
Ride.
But
yeah.
There's a different culture of cooking.
Yes.
And but remember, because I went to a top hotel where, you know, some amazing chef had worked and some amazing people would stop and visit. There was some really good cooking going on at the hotel. There was an amazing cheese platter. There was amazing pâtisserie. There was good croissant. There was good bread. Mm. But it's true that the average person ate differently. It's a cultural thing.
Well, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. More with Gabrielle Gette when we return. Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tonight, we are celebrating the life of chef, cookbook author and TV star Gabrielle Gette. Now, we talked before the break about your entry into the world of being a chef and moving from France to London, but you also did national service in West Germany for the NATO services, didn't you? That's a step away, obviously.
Well, it was not by choice.
No.
It was compulsory at the time. Every young man did it.
Mm.
So you get called. At that time, there was a bit of a choice of time, and I decided, I've got to do it.
No, so get it done.
I needed to do it before I was 22.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and at that time, I was 20.
Okay,
I had my 20th birthday in London,
mm-hmm.
and you do a training for 3 months where you learn to be a soldier, and then after that, you're given a job. And of course, I got a job as a chef in Normandy, actually.
Oh.
There's a questionnaire, where would you like to go? And usually you are not sent there because it's the army.
Yeah.
Like it's like the kitchen. Where do you want to work? I want to do the fish.
Or are you going the other way?
Do the pastry. No, at the beginning, of course.
Yeah.
It's just, it's part of whatever suits them. And I was, however, given the job of working in an officer's mess where there was a general. And the first day you get, they kind of interview you. Are you happy to be here? You know, they are human.
Mm.
You know, everybody is human. It's just organizations sometimes.
Yes.
I've got to be disciplined. And are you happy to be here? I said, yes. I said, but I had asked to go in Germany. You know, remember, I traveled already. I was able to speak to those people in a way that was, you know. And I could speak a bit of English, and I had done German at school.
Right,
I had done German.
You're quite
at school.
The asset.
I'm not a good linguist. You can hear my accent, but I love languages.
Yeah,
you can be a terrible linguist, but love languages.
Yes.
Which means that you have strong accents and takes you a bit longer to learn, but you love them. You love communicating, and that was it. You know, like I was starting to cook. I think I stayed for 2 or 3 weeks. Suddenly. You get a note like, tomorrow you are moving. That's what happens with the army, because you have just a bag.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have luggage. You don't have a suitcase. In the army, you just have a bag with one civilian clothes, and then the rest is the army. So suddenly, I was in the train going to Baden-Baden, which was the headquarters of the French base army in Germany. Because at that time, there was the American force, there was the Canadian force, and there were a few... As part of the agreements that, you know, after the war, that there should not be problems, and that became NATO.
Amazing. And it wasn't not long after that that you met your wife, is that right?
Yes, after 1 year, my national service finished, and I loved the experience in Germany. It was different. I was working less than in restaurants.
Yes.
Was working less.
I can imagine very incredibly different
very
psychological
different. Yes,
leap.
Yes, yeah. Although
to go
I had,
and do that.
I had, inevitably, I had conflict with people. Not that I had conflict with people generally, but at the army, I had conflict with people because of the way they treat you again.
Mm.
You know, like you're cooking
regimental.
Well, and then someone tells you, this is not the way you do it, when you know that it's actually the way you do it.
Yeah, but you have to...
Yeah, shut up.
Yes. I didn't want to say that, but that's right.
No, it was like working with for Kerry Packer.
Yes.
It was like that. Seriously. I can't tell you, I worked for him.
Yeah, you have. So you were well-schooled. You didn't need to... You didn't
No, that's why I knew exactly what he was coming to. From a regimented family.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Where you just become a general when your dad has gone.
Move up the ranks.
Yeah.
So, sorry, after that you returned to Paris and you, a beautiful young Australian woman.
Yes.
Angie. comes into your life.
She was beautiful, but she was 7 years older than me.
That's all right.
So she was not so young.
Well, she was still young, given that you were in your early 20s.
She was very young. But when you are 21 and you date a 28-year-old woman,
that is a different...
There is a difference at that age. Yeah. Not now.
No.
Not now. Not now. So, no, she was absolutely delightful. She's still delightful. Mm-hmm. And she had the love of languages because she's a language teacher.
Oh.
And she loved...
Met your match.
She loved food.
Oh.
And she loved traveling.
Beautiful.
So that was exactly... it. You know, like that expression, which is silly, tick the boxes.
The paperwork
which I don't
was
like,
right.
But that's what,
I know what you
that's
mean.
What
yeah.
in business people do.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. How did you meet her?
She had just come back from Sweden, where she had been spending 4 months. When I came back to Paris, I had to find a place to live. And I had placed an ad, you know, a little piece of paper that people look at,
yes.
at the Sorbonne University, to ask if there was any English-speaking people that would like to share an apartment. You had to share. It's like here now.
Yeah.
You had to share. Mm-hmm. In Paris, life was very expensive at the time.
And well, still is. Yeah.
But Australia is now dearer.
Getting there, right.
Yeah. We heard more money, but it's dearer. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a bit sad. Mm. It didn't used to be like that. Mm-hmm. But it's... wonderful country. It was not her who answered. It was another woman, Annie, that had just come back from Sweden, who I was a good friend of Angie, my wife. And we decided to look together.
Okay.
To find a place. And then Angie suddenly came to join us one day. And then, you know, we just fell in love.
Yeah. Did you know straight away?
I thought she was amazing.
That is beautiful. So is Angie who we have to thank, because she was Australian.
Yes,
is she who we have to thank for bringing you to Australia?
And not only that, for helping me enormously with my English at the beginning, enormously with the writing of the first books. Mm-hmm. And she still contributes a lot to you know, the my well-being and the one of our family. And she contributes to... things to do with my work.
So she obviously had to come home. She's Australian, and you decided you wanted to follow her.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have any problems with that.
And have you ever looked back when you arrived in Australia? What was your first impression? Oh, my God. They eat bacon and eggs all the time.
Interesting, because I arrived in September. Uh-huh. You know, when you are 22, you don't really care too much about what people eat, because you want to have a bit of fun, and you know it's not quite the same. And but when you can cook, you go and buy ingredients and you cook them for yourself. So I arrived on Grand Final Day in Australia.
Oh, did you? Yeah. What a day to arrive.
In 1977.
Into Melbourne or Sydney?
Into Melbourne.
Yeah.
To Melbourne.
Wow.
Angie's from Melbourne.
Yes.
And my brother-in-law and Angie's sister's husband picked me up from the airport.
Did you think everyone was crazy?
No.
Fancy arriving here on Grand Final Day.
French people have very little ideas of Australians.
Right.
My young brother, when he met Angie, my wife, for the first time, he said, she's not Australians, because they're all dark there, you know?
Very different.
At that time, because what French people, uneducated in some ways, I was not very educated myself earlier, We knew boomerang and things like that.
Oh, but especially when it wasn't such a globalized world.
But when you think of it, he was right. It was the real Australians. That's what we saw in France.
Yes.
People didn't know that, you know, there was a large white population.
Wow.
Only some people, but not in the country.
Yeah. So you arrive here. It's Grand Final Day. You're obviously, you settle in. How does television become the next step for you?
Okay, well, first, we moved to Adelaide after 2 weeks, because Angie was teaching in Adelaide before going to Europe.
Right.
And so she decided to go back there. Mm-hmm. And so I had to find a job. Look in the newspaper. There was a job as a second chef advertised. I went there and got it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought it would take ages. Unfortunately, it was not a great restaurant.
No.
But that's okay. It's okay. I had, you know, at that time,
you needed the
it
work.
Was survival, you know, like everybody else. Yeah. You know, you need to live. You know, I've done lots of jobs in between jobs to live. Then I worked in a second restaurant, and there was lots of friction between partners. Mm. Actually, you know, they were financial partners. Mm. In Europe, it was more family-like. There was friction, but... It was
There's
harmonious.
No escape because they're family.
harmonious friction, yeah. Like where it was, you know, money, things like that.
Right.
So after two jobs like that, I thought, gosh, you know, first they're not doing the cooking that I like. Mm. So I decided to go freelance. Mm-hmm. And I've freelanced since that time.
Wow.
So I said, what could I do? And I decided I could maybe go and cook dinner parties in people's place. Mm-hmm. So I went to the, because I had worked with top chefs that were media savvy, mm-hmm. really like understood how to talk about themselves. I went to the press outlet in Adelaide and said, this is what I do. And, you know, I go to people's place and cook dinners. And they were a bit fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. And one of my clients that I went to, actually Channel 10, mm-hmm. and there was a lady called Jay Walton. She ran a show for enormous number of years, like one of the longest running show in Australia at that time, called Touch of Elegance. Mm-hmm. It was like a bit like Good Morning Australia. So Jay was doing like Bert, where you know, mm-hmm. she would have interesting guests. At that time, there was someone demonstrating a machine, you know, like you work for a commercial network, you've got to get the money from somewhere, you know, a slicer and things mm-hmm. like that. So I went to see her. She said, oh, actually, I have a dinner next week and I'm very busy. Would you cook it for me? I said, what I do.
Yes.
That's what I do.
Beautiful.
So I went to a place, cooked it. She really liked it. And she said, would you cook that dish on my show? And I said, yes,
and
of course.
So begins.
I had assisted
star.
Chefs in France.
Yes.
You know, doing that.
Yes.
Not done it. So suddenly I got that first dish, which became the week after, the week after, the week
you
after.
You never look back. Yeah.
And, you know, not paid for many years. Now, at that time, you didn't, it's still mostly you don't get paid, of course, if you, you know, do a one-off recipe. But
yes.
I didn't mind.
Yes.
Because it gave me some work. It was like paying advertising.
Exposure.
Yeah, the exposure of television, the experience. Yeah.
For those of you just tuning in, we're speaking with Gabrielle Gatté, who you might know from Fun in the Kitchen, The Good Food Show, What's Cooking on Channel 9, alongside Bert Newton on Good Morning Australia. Which of those were your favourite? Which one?
I learned something from everybody.
Yeah.
Bernard King used to invite me. Bernard had a good idea of communication. He was the only one at that time say, you see, Gabrielle, this camera here is looking at your food. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But look at those two, depending on what's happening, what I say. Nobody would give you any direction at all. And it's still the same. It's unbelievable that you know, it's an industry that spends so much money.
On communication and there's no communication.
And then they can't. And then Bert, I learned a lot because Bert, of course, being a comedian, it was challenging because you have got 3 minutes to do a dish and Bert takes the piece out of
it. And he would like to stand there and just talk over what you're doing.
So it taught me to really be disciplined with my preparation to make sure, because I knew it was going to about having a joke, having a crack and things like that. So I've really learned a lot from those people, from watching others on television, from watching other chefs, of course.
Beautiful. Well, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. There is more with Gabrielle Gatté after the break. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Tonight we're celebrating the incredible life and career of Gabrielle Gatté, who you would know from television, from cookbooks, from the Tour de France, of course. But the cookbooks, let's go back to that, Gabrielle. I have one, a beautiful-looking one in my hands at the moment, so French, so sweet, and it has things in it that are what fantasies are made of.
Yes. No, it
right
is.
Right now I'm looking
it
at...
It is stimulating your senses, though.
Rice pudding with...
And that's when we talk about food being a language. You are creating messages with beautiful images.
Chocolate tart, that's me. That is me with a bowl around it. Amazing.
Yes, cooking is a skill.
Yes.
And you can learn to cook by learning to cook a new dish regularly. Let's say you want to learn a risotto. You get a good recipe, you read it very carefully so you don't get caught with a step.
That's my problem, and I reckon that's a lot of people's problem.
Yes,
you don't read it properly first.
No, because suddenly it says marinate the chicken for 3 hours and you want to eat in half an hour.
Yes.
So that's I have taught cooking for 40 years.
You've got
years
to read ahead. Yes,
you have got to visualize the dish. You say, okay, the onion is falling in the pan, there's a bit of olive oil, it's becoming transparent. I add the rice and mix the rice for a minute or two. I add the stock little by little, and then I add the mushrooms, and then it's going to cook for a few minutes or now. Maybe I wipe my bench and I get organized. I go and change a nappy very quickly, because as a mom, you are the only ones that have an excuse not to focus on their cooking, because your little darlings are more important.
My cooking is very unfocused.
Well, you will see that, of course, as they grow older.
Yeah.
You, at the moment, you know, the food is simple, but you will have to nourish them.
Yes.
So you'll have to learn a bit more at all level of cooking. Mm. And it's fascinating. If you embrace it, you will love it.
Yes.
If you fight with it, it's going to be hard. And that's what you find in my cookbook.
Yeah.
It's not just recipes. The recipe is just a score. It's like music. Mm. You know, it's a score. Mm. But it's not the what is important is to learn to play your instrument, to understand your ingredients.
To learn the language.
To understand the emotion that the music is giving. Mm. And to put your interpretation to it.
What a beautiful analogy. You 25, am I right, 25
yes,
cookbooks?
Yes, yeah.
Where on earth do you find the time? And also...
It's easy.
How do you think of 25 different...
Okay, give me a theme.
Children.
There children.
We talked about children.
Okay, so children, you need to give them a balanced diet. So you need
I was just going to give them everything out of this cookbook that you
well,
handed me.
You can, but not all the time. So with kids... You have got, it's more your psychology with them that will be important with the food. Not to put them off, not to say, do you think you like that? Mm. With children at the beginning, you take the decisions. You don't ask little kids because you are responsible.
Yes.
Later on, of course, you can't force, and you can't force a child.
Mm.
But you have got to say, how can I nourish that child well? Mm. We worry always too much as a parent.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The role of parents is to cook. The role of kids is to eat.
I thought it was to throw it on the floor and then waste everything that you've cooked for the last week.
No? Well,
no?
Well, that's, you know what? Yesterday we were babysitting two granddaughters. They are the same age. They are three. Not sisters, cousins.
Yes.
And they have thrown a lot of food on the floor.
But breaks my heart.
You know what? It doesn't last. Like at about three, suddenly they don't throw food on the floor.
They throw it at you instead.
Sometimes. And then they're finished. They take their plate to the bench because Mappy or Pappy ask them, bring your plate.
Yes.
And they bring it. And then after that, you say, do you want a few blueberries or do you want some strawberries for dessert?
Yeah.
And then you put it on the plate and you say, take your plate. Be careful. Look at what is in the plate. You give them a plate that is, and you put it. So variety is moderation, but also it depends on your cultural background. Mm. Don't expect that a Chinese child is going to eat the same as you.
Mm.
It's not in their DNA to start
with. Well, I interviewed Elizabeth Chong on this
Absolutely.
Very show, and she was telling me she would make fried rice every morning for
Absolutely.
Breakfast for her children.
We are very good friends. We used to swap.
She's wonderful.
She's extraordinary.
Yes.
She's very under-celebrated.
Yes.
Because of her nationality a long time ago.
Right.
She came to our place in France at some stage. We had a sabbatical, and she had been eating French food for the last 2 weeks. And I said, Elizabeth, what do you want to eat? And she said, Gabby, cook me some rice, please. Seriously. Seriously.
I'm going to ask you something I ask every chef I come into contact with. Is there a night in your home where you say, you know what? I just feel like baked beans on toast.
Yes, of course.
If you're... What is the baked beans on toast of the Gete household?
It's usually look in the fridge and make a salad with what there is. You know,
salad.
Like you know, like there's you know, there can be some walnuts, there can be a bit of cheese, you can have a bit of ham, you can have some avocado, you can have a little bit of herbs.
Fancy.
But if you know, it's like what I know, I'm fluent. Almost fluent in cooking, although I can learn a lot more, I can converse. So for me, it takes nothing. I open the fridge, I see 10 dishes. I open the cupboard, I see 10 dishes.
Can you come to my house?
No. You have got someone else?
Yeah.
And it will be seen very badly in the press. I might be put in prison.
No. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, Gabriel.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Well, if you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the podcast and join me again the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Great Australian lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.